And on the line, are you there, Sid?
I am, yes, Phil. How are you?
That was Edith Piaf. I'm sure you know her. Saïra.
Yes, indeed.
All the revolutionaries of France always said, it's going to be fine.
Okay, we'll see.
Sid, we want to ask you about your reaction. I mean, I didn't realize I was going to be talking about elections, but there's so many going on that seem to have really beginning to resonate with people. I noticed you tweeted already today about the results in France, and we've had this election in Britain. I'll start you off. You were quite positive of the news that I guess it's Mélenchon's party, the United Front, seemed to have come in first. Tell us about your reaction.
Well, I mean, obviously, with the news from last week, everybody thought that Marie Le Pen was going to have the strongest showing and, of course, move France to the extreme right. And that was obviously something that didn't come to pass. And now with the revitalized left having formed a coalition of all the left parties, surprisingly won. So, I mean, that's really, really good news on many fronts. It's even good news when it comes to Gaza, because the new left there will have a completely different position when it comes to not only Gaza, but issues like pensions and rolling back Macron's right-wing agenda.
Yes.
So that, to me, was really, really hopeful in the sense that in the UK, although Labour, I wouldn't necessarily say Labour is very left, but there were some leftists who got elected, like Jeremy Corbyn and other independents and others who ran on a strictly pro-Palestinian agenda, got themselves elected. But they rejected the far-right policies of Sunak. So mm-hmm. That's two major countries now in Europe that have essentially rejected the far-right. And I think that's got implications for the elections in the U.S. and even indeed here.
Yes.
This guy, Polly Evra, in my opinion, is every bit as far-right as Le Pen or Sunak was in the U.K. And people just, as of this moment in Canada, are not seeing that. So hopefully they'll wake up and really start to take a look at this guy and his policies. And not only that, but his record when he was in Parliament was atrocious. I mean, he was gloating about the fact that he wanted to bring in right-to-work legislation. He wanted to get rid of the RAND formula. Mm-hmm. Even now, he's rejecting dental care for children from low-income families and from senior citizens. I mean, this guy's an extreme right-winger, and people haven't yet, I don't think, woken up to that fact.
Yeah. I think you're right. Now people look at these results, and they're going to examine themselves. I was struck that Mélenchon says that they would recognize Palestine as a state. And, of course, Macron is not in favor of that. But I didn't realize that that had been, like, part of the election campaign, and that would be a dramatic shift.
It sure would be. Now, I didn't realize it was part of the campaign, but I guess it's been part of his policy all along. Now, whether or not he was articulating that throughout the campaign in the last couple of weeks or not, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's certainly welcome news, given that Ireland and Spain and was it Malta? I think I'm not sure it was Malta. Norway.
Historic ties, Ireland and France. There's a little bit of, there's been a closeness. Tell us about Ireland. There were four members of Sinn Féin were elected, right?
Actually, there was eight members of Sinn Féin got
eight.
Elected. So they're now the largest party in Northern Ireland in the UK government. Mm-hmm. Now, they won't be taking their seats because Sinn Féin refuses to swear allegiance to King Charles or the Queen before that. So they don't take their seats, but they do have an office in London, and they will have some influence. The Sinn Féin have now completed what they call the trifecta. This year alone, they won the most seats in the Northern Ireland Assembly, which is essentially their government. They won the most seats in local elections, and now they've won the most seats in UK elections, and they have the most seats in the Irish Parliament in the Republic. So it's a party that's clearly on the march, though they didn't do very well in the European elections just gone by. But hopefully they can recover in time whenever they call an election in the Republic again.
People may have less faith in what the significance of that body, but when the battle is joined involving the UK, everybody says, okay, let's go and do this. It's really striking. 8 members, and they won't, and they it's understood they're not going to go and swear allegiance.
No, they won't.
And they never get the vote.
Ever since Bobby Sands got elected, they've now moved away. Like before, they were, you know, I'm going back now to the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, they were seen basically as the political wing of the IRA. Mm-hmm. And that is not the case anymore. They've now clearly morphed into a proper social democratic party, pushing all of those policies. So I think that's what's appealing to people both in the South and in the North, is that they're winning in seats now where the DUP, the Unionist Party, had strongholds, and the Sinn Féin are now winning seats over. So clearly they're appealing to people with a broad, you know, a broad spectrum of policy issues that people can see this will make life better for us. Yeah. So that's really heartening to see. And I think with the 8 seats having been won in Northern Ireland in the UK Parliament, I just cannot see how the Labour Party now in the UK can turn down the possibility of a referendum. Because clearly now you can see that the Good Friday Accord was premised on the fact that when the people essentially start to vote democratically to be able to join with the South, the fact now that it's Sinn Féin are winning all of these elections, largest party, largest local party, largest party in Northern Ireland in the UK, and the largest party in the South, the conditions are being met from the Good Friday Accord to essentially at least hold a referendum to see if the folks in Northern Ireland would wish to join in with the South. And I think that day that day of reckoning is coming pretty soon.
Yeah, that's when we really have to watch. We're speaking to Sid Ryan. He has a book, by the way, that everybody should read, particularly if you want to understand the contemporary Canadian labor movement. It's titled The Grander Vision, My Life in the Labor Movement. And Sid, you posted a speech you gave. I don't know where it was. You were answering the question, why do the Irish support the Palestinians? Tell us what's in that speech and how many people have been looking at this.
Well, it went viral. It was it's posted on both TikTok and on Instagram. It's underneath the Irish for Palestine. So that's Irish, the number 4, Palestine, Irish for Palestine. And it has garnered almost 1.3 million views right across the world. And it's now still picking up 3,000 or 4,000 hits every single day. So, so it's basically essentially saying that we understand the Palestinians, we understand occupation, because we've been occupied for 800 years before we managed to kick the Brits out of Ireland, out of the south of Ireland, at least anyways. And Ireland had its own uprising, if you want to call it an intifada, back in 1916, and that led into the Brits pulling out of Ireland. So that's what essentially the little speech about. And it's only a short speech, you know, it only goes on, I think it was a minute and a half, but it went viral.
But, you know, that's the way to do it, a good, short, strong speech, with good content. That's what people want.
Exactly. So that went very well. And there's another one that I gave at the University of Toronto encampment. I spoke at that. And same thing. That didn't get as many, but it's in the tens of thousands of views. It's really good. Now, of course, as we had mentioned earlier on in the week, I can see that the Ontario Federation of Labour came out to support the encampment at the University of Toronto, which was exceptionally... I was exceptionally pleased to see that, because
they were so eloquent. The content, they really came forward and publicly addressed it. And the leader, it wasn't just a simple, here's a press release from somebody in the office. They took a stand. I was surprised.
Well, I was surprised too, because, you know, there are no union leaders, with the exception maybe of Fred Hahn and J.P. Hornick from OPSU, are about the only two union leaders that are saying anything about Gaza and the atrocities and the genocide that's taken place over there. The CLC is completely silent. Most unions leaders, you know, whether it be from the steel workers, whether it be the auto workers, the United Food and Commercial Workers, all the big unions are all silent. Mm-hmm. So I was pleasantly surprised to see that the OFL came out, as you said, with a very strong statement, which essentially says you'll have to come through us if you're going to go mm-hmm. after and start attacking the students with the police force.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, and I showed up there the next morning just to basically see how many people were going to show up, and I was again surprised. It was pouring rain, and still there were thousands of people out there.
That was
so
phenomenal.
So Labour responded in a very positive way, and of course, as we know, the folks in the encampment voluntarily took it down once they lost the injunction.
Yeah.
But they put up a hell of a stand, and I sincerely believe that we've not heard the end of this boycott, divestment, and sanctions against the state of Israel.
Yeah, my impression is that they've been completely underestimated. They're very sophisticated, very mature, and they don't fall into traps. They actually consult with each other, and they make in their wisdom they take decisions together and they keep it together. It's very impressive.
It was impressive actually, and the fact that you know, just about 5 o'clock in the evening, they completely dismantled the encampment, and I was watching on YouTube there, Rebel News and all the right wing media, they were epileptic because they were waiting and hoping to see heads getting cracked open and,
you're right,
and you know, these protesters being hauled away. And of course, they didn't give them that opportunity, which I thought was extremely clever of them to do that.
Yeah.
And then still the issue about divestment of pension funds and divestment of endowments out of the state of Israel is exactly what's it's still on the agenda. That hasn't gone away.
Oh, absolutely. And there's been an attempt to try to isolate them and say they're marginal. They're not at all. They're mainstream Canadian opinion, actually.
Well, you know, when you think about it, I've been saying this on the internet as well, on social media. I mean, I actually think that B'nai B'rith and CJET and Simon Wiesenthal, these are all like fake and phony human rights organizations. But they've never once come out and condemned the genocide that's taking place in Gaza. And on top of that, they come out and smear the good name of protesters who come out and call them a bunch of anti-Semites and Hamas supporters and whatever else they want to come up with. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, wait a second, these are peace activists marching in the streets calling for a ceasefire. And these so-called human rights organizations are critical of them because they're calling for a ceasefire.
Yes.
I mean, you can't make this stuff up.
No, exactly. So a terrorist is somebody who calls for a ceasefire.
It's crazy. And yet these guys are getting government funding. You know, if it was the shoe was on the other foot and was a left-wing organization, you know, calling for genocide in a country or the continuation of a war, their funding would be cut off overnight. Their tax-free status would be cut back, would be eliminated.
Yes.
And yet here we have these Zionist organizations pretending to be speaking for human rights, mm-hmm. and all they're doing is attacking those folks who are on the streets, who are, you know, proclaiming what's going on in Gaza is genocide and calling for a ceasefire.
Yeah.
And
by
yet,
the way,
somehow, they're the anti-Semites, so they're the terrorists. It's crazy.
It's almost the old trick of using noise to cover up facts. It's like we're not being reminded that the International Court of Justice has been hearing overwhelming evidence led by South Africa, and Mexico has now joined the States, and Ireland, I think, has joined.
Ireland has joined.
Yeah, the prosecution making this case, and instead we're getting, it's as though that had not happened. But the world knows happen.
He's got arrest, at least they're seeking an arrest warrant for Netanyahu and the cabal in his cabinet. And it's almost as if this is not happening just because the United States says we don't think the case has been made.
Yes. Because if it's made, they understand that the case is also against them since they're the prime enabler.
Of course.
Hey, I better ask you in the time remaining, you've also spoken out on an important immediate labor issue. This is the liquor board strike, I'm going to call it. Talk about those people and their issues.
Well, that's a hugely important issue here because there's much more at stake than simply, you know, the jobs, if you will. And I'm not saying that, trying to dismiss that the jobs are hugely important. But the revenue that LCBO generates, $2.5 billion a year at least for the Ontario coffers, which is money that goes into sustaining the healthcare system and the public education system. So this is like a gross underfunding of those particular social services if Ford goes ahead and privatizes, which is basically what he's trying to do. We know, you know, this is his agenda. Any opportunity he tries to parry off into the private sector, any of these public services that he can hive away from the public sector and put them over in the private sector. So this is a really, really important strike from that perspective. So there's much more at stake, as I say, besides wages and benefits. There's this, you know, broader social justice issue, and not only social justice, but social programs that people rely upon.
Yeah, that's a great summary, Sid. It's always wonderful to talk to you. Your book, A Grander Vision, My Life in the Labor Movement, is the best book I've read on contemporary labor in Canada. I hope people get it. And, of course, all you have to write is Sid Ryan and follow him. Hey, thanks very much, Sid.
My pleasure, Phil. Nice talking to you. All the best. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.